is the PR Essentials Summit. Thanks for joining me. Today, I have Jasmine Stanley from our team joining us, talking about Media Relations 101, press releases, pitching, and all of the media things.
Welcome to the PR Playbook Podcast, the only podcast giving you actionable skills and advice you need to execute a strategic PR program. Warning, what you hear next may lead to brand awareness and increased sales and customer exposure. Now here's your host, Ringini Joshua.
Hello and welcome to the PR Essentials Summit series. This is our third year running with the PR Essentials Summit, where we talk to experts about what happened in 2023 and what we foresee for future trends in different industries, including social media, SEO, obviously PR, media relations, journalism, content development. And so I hope you guys enjoy this series as we kick off the new year and get ready to build proactive strategies to make your communications programs better. And as always, make sure you email me if you have any questions, Ronjini@thesilvertelegram.com. Enjoy the series.
Thanks, Jasmine, for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Excited to start talking about press releases and all that jazz. And I see what you did there.
Yes, all that jazz. There's a lot to talk about, and I want to talk about trends as well. So as we're diving into it, not just tactical, because I know we have lots of content around that on the PR Playbook and from previous summits, but I think I really want to kind of talk about trends and what we're seeing and the changes that we've been seeing as PR professionals as well. Yeah. So we'll dive into this nice long list that we have today. So this is like the agenda, and then we'll go through them individually. Press releases, when to pitch, how to find the right contacts, pitching length and call to actions, podcast versus feature versus article, the news cycle and how that's affected pitching, especially right now, what to expect, how to follow up on pitching, and any other media hacks that we might have to uncover during this conversation. I think the main question that a lot of people ask me, actually someone asked me this last week, is do I still need one? What do you say, Jasmine, on do I still need a press release?
I think it just depends on the situation. So I would say for certain things like a new product launch, I think a press release can be really supplemental to provide more information for readers and, you know, for the media. But I think for the majority and the most part, I really like to rely on pitching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's really good as a supplement, but again, I think it just depends, because I feel like in my career of the last 10 years of doing this, what I've realized is clients want to put any and everything in a press release. And I also think sometimes like some things are better as a pitch versus a release. Like it's an overused tool in my
opinion. Yeah. And I agree with that too. I think press releases have a place. I agree with you, though, that like people want to put everything into a press release instead of strategically actually adding what they need to. It's like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to say every single thing I've ever wanted to say in my life. Versus, you know, let's be really specific about the message that we want to deliver. And I think sometimes people also forget that press releases are not a tool to reach your target audience. They are a tool to reach the media, to reach your target audience. So
I think
that's another thing to remember. I like to remind people.
And also I like to remind people that they get so many press releases. Again, it's so overused. They're poorly written. These are things that I've experienced, like even just from doing certain collaborations. And I'll see, I'm like, okay, this is not a good press release. We're gonna have to redraft. Right. You know, it's like, it's certain formatting. And of course I went to school for PR. So like, that's like literally just like this PR 101, the very first class they teach you is press releases.
Right.
An internship, I had already kind of learned, you know, the process for writing a press release. So when I got to the class, I was kind of well-versed, but I realized like, it's just, they're so tired of seeing press releases that are not really press releases, that don't give them that information that they're looking for. And so sometimes they can ignore a press release, even though it's a really good one. So
and to your point, that is actually the problem with press releases. It's not the press release itself. It's the misuse of the press release.
The misuse, right? Overuse of the press release. Yeah.
Yeah. What about, okay, you talked a little bit about pitching, but what about, like, you know, sometimes I always tell people, not always, sometimes I tell people that sense of urgency often comes with a press release, right? When it comes to product launches and things like that, the media will say, hey, where's the press release? Is it under embargo? They'll ask these questions actively. What about when it comes to that?
I honestly, I think the best time for a press release is when it's something timely. So like a funding announcement is a perfect time for that. And that, of course, could be under embargo. Like those type of things, I feel like really work. And then also I've seen a shift too in embargo documents. I know we've talked about this before, how some media are like, don't send us any embargo documents. We're not going to keep the embargo. Yeah. I forgot who it was, an editor that did an entire letter, like, to Dear Publicist.
Oh, I think I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, please don't send us any embargo. We're going to tell you we're going to keep it. And then we're breaking it on purpose. We're so tired of this. It's like, again, the same thing with the press release, like overused press release, everything's embargoed and they get it. And it's like, this information isn't even time sensitive, or like, you're not talking about anything financial, anything that would, you know, affect the company, or like, you really need to have an embargo. So I don't even know how I feel about embargoed press releases.
Embargoes. Now. Yeah. I mean, I think that is a misunderstood tactic, using an embargoed release. And I think, I think I have a podcast on embargoes versus exclusives versus media alerts or something like that. So that's a good podcast on the PR Playbook podcast. It's a good podcast to tune into just to kind of give you the differences of what these things mean and when you should use them. I think that's utility of those things is really important, because it's often the misuse that makes it messy. And a company just asked me, I want to say like 2 weeks ago, like, should I even do a press release? And I was like, well, I understand your aversion to doing a press release, but I also think there's a place for a press release to keep a momentum, visibility, SEO. And there's a few different reasons why you would want to do it, you know, but I think that's something just to kind of remember. So I guess in this next thing is when to pitch. Let's say whether you're using a press release or not, when to pitch, I think it's kind of a broad topic. I was kind of inferring like when you should be pitching versus when you should be doing a press release. But I think this also is what time to pitch. Like, you know, like, I don't know if you've seen, and as PR professionals, we use like Muckrack and Cision and those kinds of tools. And sometimes they even say like, you know, pitch me from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. That's the time I look at pitches. So there, this when to pitch kind of refers to all of those things. What do you think about that?
So I definitely, again, I come from the old school PR side where we called people. I know sounds like a far out idea.
Crazy.
We used to call people on the phone and speak with them and pitch them stories if they were interested. It was honestly, I feel like, the lack of doing that is what has kind of caused that rift in between publicists and like the media, because you don't have that, oh, hey, how you doing? How's your kids? You know, like a rapport that you're building with them when you call them on the phone. It's like a dry, cold email. Please, my client is doing this. I think it's so important, even though it may not be to them, right? Like, it's a lot of things that go into pitching, like making sure that you're contacting the appropriate editor for the right beat. You know, a lot of times that is really big part of the when to pitch, right? If you know that they have like a monthly column that they're doing, you really need to figure out like, what are their deadlines? You know, when should you be reaching out to them? When are they submitting and accepting pitches? How far in advance? Some of them are like, especially print, right? Print is like, you need 3 months lead time. So if you have a product that's coming out and you're trying to do gift guides, you need to be pitching that to whoever you want to get in print summertime. Right. I know it's weird, but that's just really the timeline if you want to hit those media targets and those outlets. You really have to think about that. And then, you know, I know a lot of people think, well, this is timely because it's gift guide season right now. Well, by that time, they've already filled up their gift guides. They're moving on to something else, like New Year's things, which is usually what happens after that. You know, a lot of New Year's resolutions or New Year's products to get your year started and get you on the right track. So now you're like way behind, you know?
Yeah.
So that's important. And to your point about the press release versus the pitch, I definitely think what has worked for us is pre-pitching, right? So coming up with 10 major targets that we really want to get to reach. And one of the things about that is like, just because you send a pitch one time, you're not always going to get a response right then. And so giving yourself enough time to pre-pitch them, right? Get it on their table. They might be on deadline. They might be on vacation. and then coming back a little bit closer to the time that you're actually launching and releasing the press release works really well. I mean, honestly, yeah. I sent a pitch out last week and I just got a response today. Like, it's been literally a week, you know?
Yeah. But, well, and it's just the holidays. So like the different time cycles, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider that people just don't think. I mean, I feel like, you know, as PR pros, we see it all. But I think when people are DIYing their PR or pitching media for the first time, I don't know if they just think the media is waiting for us to pitch them or what they're thinking. That's just not reality. It's just, they're not waiting for us. They could care less if we show up or not. You know, it's our job to stand out. And I think that's what people forget, is that that's why it's so difficult. And PR people go through so much rejection. It's like just insane.
Sometimes for me, it's not even rejection. Like, they just don't answer me. It's like, imagine getting ghosted on the professional level versus like the dating level. Like, it's a little heart wrenching, but okay. And I try not to take it to heart. I find that ghosting kind of like leads to a cue, right? So it's basically, this pitch is not for me, right? When the media is interested, they're going to respond, even if it, to my point, a week later, you know? And if it's a big publication you're trying to reach, or even, you know, which is more important, just starting that relationship, it's okay. You know, you might not get that story, but once they do respond, once they, you know, are interested in your angle, now you have them as a resource and you're a resource to them going forward. So it's just keeping all of those things in mind too. Like, okay, they ghosted me. I really wanted to get this in this publication, but it was just maybe not the right time.
So this kind of leads into this next point. And I think we're going to cover this, all of the points multiple times, but how to find the right contacts and targets. And I think from my previous summits, if you listen to our fireside chats with media, any conversation I've had with media on the PR Playbook podcast, our media guys are always saying, like, look, the biggest challenge is that they don't get my name right, or I'm just not the right person. And you have to find the right person.
Yeah, you definitely have to find the right person. I know that that is literally the biggest thing. Like, that will get you ghosted super quick. And not just ghosted, you will get blocked on the email if you're sending it to the wrong person, especially more than once, you know?
I think the other thing to remember in this too is that it's not that hard to find the right person. And if you're not sure, these people are still humans. They're not like professional robots. Like, if you can recognize the fact that you're not sure that it's the right person, even that could be helpful, right? Because sometimes well, if I can't find the right person, I always go to the editor-in-chief and I'll be like, hey, can you point me in the right direction? Which reporter of yours covers this topic? So that's kind of my go-to if I can't find it. But if I kind of see that this person has written about the topic maybe a couple times, but not all the time, and I'll be like, hey, look, I saw that you wrote an article that was similar. I actually don't know if you're always writing about this or if this is of interest to you, but I thought I'd, like, you know, float it past you. And if there's someone more appropriate, please let me know. I think that's okay. I feel like for any reasonable person, that should be okay.
Yeah. And that's literally the same thing I do as well. Like, always doing the research. So to your point, the first step is like, yeah, you might have, unless you've met this person, because reached out to you previously and told you, and you know, like, looked in their signature and you see that they're personal technology editor, the first step is always the research, like what kind of articles they've written. And it's so easy to do that now because the publications, you can put that person's name in and all of their articles
pop up. Yeah.
Right under the author. You can kind of see, you know, what they've talked about, what they maybe not talked about, which is more important. And then also, you know, you might be able to find through that way another editor if you're putting in that topic. So like, maybe you think Jane writes about personal tech, but you realize she might have left the company. So that's another thing too. She might not even be there any longer. She might be in a different position at the outlet. And so you need to like make sure you say like, okay, maybe there's another personal editor, you know.
There's to that point, there is an editor and writer for everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. And so to assume that one person writes about five topics, that's such a bad assumption in today's media landscape. There is literally an editor for every little tiny niche. AI is such a big house, right? But then there's robotics, machine learning, computer vision, chatbots.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you don't be fooled into thinking all journalists are equal. They're really just not. and they just really write about, I think the more veteran ones write about what they want to write about more specifically, right? Like they get to choose. More junior editors or junior writers, they're given assignments. So sometimes even if they've written about something before, it was an assignment from the editor. So it's like not like their passion project. It's just like they've something someone assigned them. So that's why I say if all else fails, go to the editor-in-chief. They can at least point you in the better direction or at least assign it to somebody. But never make an assumption unless you see this person is consistently writing about Apple that they're going to write about Apple again, you know? Sure.
Like literally Apple has Apple editors, Beyonce and Taylor Swift have their own writers now. Everyone, like you said, whoever, whatever the topic is, there's going to be a specific person for that.
Exactly. That goes into pitch length. And I have a lot of varied views on pitch length, but I'd love to hear your perspective on pitch length because you do a lot of pitching.
Traditionally, what do they say? Super quick, right? Nothing too long. Nothing. I mean, over 200 words, which to me, I feel like 200 words is a little bit short to provide the information, but I try to keep it relatively, it depends on what the topic is. Like if it's something that I might need to do a little education or explain why I feel like, you know, their readers are interested in it, and it's important outside of what on the outside of when you first read something or hear it, then, you know, my pitch will be a little bit longer, but definitely try to keep it on the short side, include other things. Like that's my go-to now, like a press kit or like always including the website or whatever the product or the client is. And yeah, like there's always, as you put in here, a call to action. You know, please let me know if you're interested in interviewing this person. Please let me know if you'd like to stop by their booth at CES. Please let me know if you'd like more information or you'd like the press kit. It's always something at the end of that where it's just-
Sometimes I even say like, I even open it up. So I've kind of flipped it a little bit. Yeah. Call to action is extremely important. So please tell me what you want to do or giving them an option is always like the go-to. But now I'll say, well, what do you think? Or can you meet on Tuesday? Or I'll end with a question so that needs an answer. You need to answer me.
Or honestly, you'll get ghosted. If they don't see any, okay, like they're just filling me in with some information. Yeah. Like they're not going to like, I'll file this for when I feel like covering it big versus like you really wanting to get a response, you know?
There's an FYI. And you know, to Jasmine's point, it's really hard to create a very short pitch when you have to educate them about what you're doing. So my recommendation for that, I mean, it's so hard to create a short pitch. You want to give them all the information. It's like you don't know how many chances you have to get in front of them. So you want to give them all the information, but you also don't want to give them so much information that they never want to look at your email again, right? So the first thing is just, I try to lure them in with like a question or a problem that I think they might have had that this solution can answer or the company can answer as a solution, and then dive into the deeper one. But you'll have to really gauge that depending on if you have pitched them before, if you have a relationship, is it a trade show? Because that's a different kind of pitching, right? And then is it timely? That's another big thing. Like, is it a trending topic or if it's their beat? So this is where that research component is so, so critical, is like really understanding why you're pitching that person and what you think will go the furthest when talking to them, right?
And, you know, additional thing I've done now too is like, I'm really aware of like what I'm pitching. If I'm pitching a company profile or a Q&A with the CEO,
specific.
Being really specific on what I'm asking them versus just, hey, can you cover this? Like, cover it how? Like, do you want me to do the press release, like, you know, put the press release on the website? Do you want me to include them in, you know, a feature article I'm writing on the topic? Do you want me to interview the CEO? It's like really being specific. And if it's like a Q&A profile on the CEO, I'll list all the things, topics that they could, you know, center their questions around. This is what the CEO can talk about. This, three different things. And I've gotten so many responses for that. And all of the questionnaires, especially if they're email, have been right in alignment with what I provided for them. And so providing them with the most information helps them not feel overworked, right? They don't work for us. They don't work for us. So it's like providing them with the most information, but not too much information and really concise is always just a good tactic.
I love that you said that. They don't work for us. Because I mean, I don't, again, I think that some clients or people that are outside of the PR realm just don't understand. They're not waiting for us to talk to them. They do not care if we show up that day. If we do, great, but let's give them a reason to really want to be interested, right? And the other thing to think about, and I don't know if we, yeah, I think I'll talk about this in a little bit later, but just, you know, there are no expectations when you go into a media relationship. It's just kind of like a discovery call. Like, you have to go into it as like a, oh, we're discovering each other to see if it's a good fit. They're not going to cover you if it's not a good fit. They don't work for you. We're not paying them. This is earned media. Different ballgame, right?
Yeah. And trust me, they have about 10 or 12 other people that feel the same way you do, trying to get the same kind of information that's so timely, so relevant, so important for their readers. So it's really important to kind of see, like, you know, like you were saying about the doing the research, what in their beat have they covered? Don't propose something that they just covered 2 weeks ago, because they're not going to cover that topic. You know, I know that, yes, you found it and they've covered it and you know that they write about it, but if they've just written about it, they're not going to rewrite about it anytime soon. What way can you angle it that it's a fresh take on what they've covered? Or maybe they missed something in that.
Right.
Bring it to their attention. Like, hey, did you know blah, 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 blah. That's the best way to do it. Not, I see you write about this, so here's some more to write about. Like, no, it doesn't.
Here's some more work to do.
Right. Here's some more stuff that you can add. They're going to be like, first of all, you're not even on the pulse right now. Okay. Yeah. Because I wrote about that 2 weeks ago.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Okay, so that kind of comes into podcast versus feature versus article pitching. And I, you know, we have you've done a lot of feature pitching for us in the past. We've done podcast pitching. So maybe I'll cover how that's different since I'm podcast lady over here. So podcast pitching is really, really specific kind of pitch. So if you guys don't learn anything in this particular session, learn this. Everything is very specific in PR. It is not throw spaghetti at the wall. It is not that kind of practice. And so when people are DIYing and wondering why it's so hard, you have to be intentional with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Podcast pitching is the same way. Everybody wants to be on a podcast and everyone has a podcast and there's hundreds and millions of podcasts out there. And it's a great strategy and tactic to build thought leadership and expertise and build your voice, but you also have to pitch it in a different way. What we do is we create a podcast profile. So it's like a background about you and what you're an expert in, kind of like the way Jasmine was talking about, here are three things that this, you know, CEO can talk about. You do the same thing. You outline three or four topics that your expert can speak to. And then the other thing that they want to know in podcast pitching is that you can speak to an audience when there's no audience there. Like, this is an audio format. You have to be able to have a conversation. If you're not a good conversationalist, do not go on a podcast. Just don't do it. I have talked to people. I've interviewed people on a podcast. And this was before my vetting process was like way more, you know, in depth. But like, I've interviewed people where I'm just like, just pulling words out of their mouth. Like, I have to like go fishing for words. It's insane. So if your person is not well-versed, do not put them on a podcast. Number one, you can put them on podcasts that help them practice. There are easier podcasts than, and some aren't as easy. So that's to note. If you want them to be on a podcast, get some media training. Let's go. We do media training. Let's get some media training in there. You have to, and sometimes it just comes with time. I can tell you the first time I did a webinar, the first time I did a podcast, the first time I did an interview, I was not this fluid, but now I can, you could get me on an interview in 2 minutes and I will be perfectly fine. I will be at home on the mic, but it is a challenge to be on a podcast. It's a different format. Just like broadcast is a different format. People always tell me when we get them on broadcast shows, they're like, oh yeah, I'm ready to go in front of a camera. Okay, let's see how ready you are when there's like lights in your face and you're sweating and it's live. It's live.
Right? That's the biggest thing. Like, and even afterwards, like they'll do good, of course. But then after they were like, I was so scared. Like, I'm sure your heart was beating in your chest because it's so different.
Or they'll remember all the things they forgot to say.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh, did I messed up on this. I messed up on that. And it's like, that's why you need to do media training. So you can kind of get fluid and you know that you're hitting all those points and saying all those things that you want to say versus feeding into the nervousness of the actual, you know, like thing and like trying to get through it, because you always want to just get through it when you're there because you just don't want to mess up. And then when you're through, you're like, dang,
I missed it. Yeah.
I missed what I really wanted to say, you know? So it's all, you know, it takes time.
And I don't know, I think I just come from a very critical family, but like, I cannot lie. When someone gets off a broadcast interview, I can't lie. I'll be like, well, you forgot this. Or you like, you know, like, or if they did good, obviously I will give them their compliment sandwich, but I cannot, especially if I'm already on the fence about the speaker and like, you know, maybe we've advised them not to do that person or something, or I advise them to do media training, they refused it, and then they go on. Like, I have to say, these are the things you missed. And you want someone to be honest with you, obviously. You don't want them to be mean, but you've got to have an honest feedback of how you did on that interview. Okay, we went into like media training. What about pitching? Let's go back to pitching. Pitching a feature article. And this is, I feel like this is kind of like a specialty of yours. So I'd love for you to just kind of talk about it a little bit.
Sure. So I'm going to try to I'll probably do both just because it's kind of easier for me to explain. So when I talk about pitching for a feature, it's definitely more in the traditional PR side, right? Yeah. Where it's like you want the editor. And that's the biggest difference between an article pitching and a feature pitching. Article pitching is, I like to call it new media, right? It's content marketing, it's integrated communications. Like that fits more alignment with that side of it. And for the feature, the editor is writing the article for you. So either they're writing a feature specifically, or they're going to include you in maybe an article that they have. And so for feature articles, just like anything else with pitching, I'd say you have to do your research. Like the first thing, I know sounds a little old school, but this is old school tactic. You have to look at look at their media kit. If it's a print magazine, see what month they're covering the specific topic that you want to pitch, so you can have your client or your product or your service included in that feature. And again, you have to make sure, you know, doing it on timeline, 3 months, whatever the case is, because you're not the only one looking at the press kit. Other people are looking, or they have other people in mind that they want to maybe work with. And so for feature writing, again, it's all about presenting the editor with as much, or the writer with as much information that you can at the time, right?
Like they someone recently asked me to get them in the Forbes, like some kind of entrepreneur feature. And I was like, first of all, do you even know that exists? And do you know when it's coming out? And so like, you know, I think it was like the Forbes 30 under 30, right? And so then we looked up the month that it was being published. And I'm like, look, if you're not in front of them at least a year before that feature, like, I don't know what to tell you. That's, you have to start introducing yourself early. Things like Fortune, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Associated, New York Times, they don't happen overnight. They're not going to happen in a month. And likely they're not going to happen in 3 months either. And I don't like to, I'm not going to say for certain, because I have done it before. It's doable, but it's not likely, you know? So right. People need to remember timelines are important.
Yeah. Timelines, managing expectations, because again, I think I'd like, again, to point out they don't work for us and they are people. So before you start just snowballing them with, cover me, pick me, I'm important. You really do, especially for the bigger publications, right? The bigger publications have so many people like that they know, that their other people in their team knows that they can cover, that they have a big pool of people to interview, right? And mm-hmm. So for them in a feature, you really want to stand out. But the best way to stand out is to have an actual relationship with them. You have to actually talk to them. You have to present yourself as a resource. You're giving versus taking, right? Yeah. That's really how you get the features going. And again, you start that way in advance. You don't just pop up one day and say, I know you guys are writing this tomorrow. Can I be included? Like, I don't know you. You know, it's just like anything else in life. Like that's how it works. And it that's the part of PR that I feel like is the traditional side of really just being, you know, treating them like humans.
I also think it's important to say that just because I know somebody doesn't mean they know you as my client.
Right.
So just because I know somebody doesn't mean they're going to give me a favor, throw me a bone. It doesn't mean anything. And I think that's one, I see these on Upwork all the time. Get me into Forbes. I need someone to get me into the Forbes or the cover of Wired or whatever. And I'm like, that is possible over time. You need and nobody wants to wait. Everybody is afraid of time. You know, it's like I get that because I am a very impatient person. I also want everything to happen now, but I'm also realistic. You know, that's just, they've never heard of you before. They're not putting you on the cover until they've heard of you 20 times in many other publications. So, you know, or you've got such a unicorn story that it's a scoop to get you. So, unless you have one of those two dynamics, don't come at me with, I need to be on the feature, the cover of Wired.
This year, and also too, I think there's another point to mention that kind of leads me to the article pitching part is a lot of these big placements that people are seeing right now are paid.
Oh,
Earned
yeah.
media right now is like
Dying
where the
slowly.
article pitching comes in because yeah, it's dying slowly, right? Because no one's getting print magazines anymore. Like that's not like really a thing. Nobody's really getting those type of subscriptions. Everything is on your phone. So, you know, they might be selling a lot of digital subscriptions, but the way that these publications get their money is through the advertising, is through these paid opportunities. So if you see something and it looks super amazing, you want to be involved, maybe have a budget in the background just in case, because that'll be super important.
I think I recently wrote something on integrating like an earned, combined earned and paid media strategy moving forward, because in 2024, that's what you're going to have to do. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I know there, and there's people that have come to us saying like, oh, I only want earned media. Okay, that's fine, but it's just going to take you longer. And
And take. It's literally give and take. And
yeah.
honestly, the bigger publications, when you do spend a little bit of a, you know, budget towards that, they're more willing to hear you around the next time. So throw some things in there. They're more willing to work with you because it's not take, 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 just cover me for free. Like they're a big publication, you know? And so unless you're providing content to them, like an article that you're writing and that they don't have to write and it's good and it's non-promotional, of course, that's the number one thing for article pitching, non-promotional, they're not going to run it unless you pay. It all goes
Yeah.
back to payment unless it's really good content. And so that's really what the difference is. That's the new media, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, let's dive into this news cycles a little bit. Timeliness. So this is what the timeliness story is. I think we can probably, I don't know how much I want to lean into this, but like obviously the recent political climate has been very, very disturbing and challenging. And I think one thing that people have to remember is even if you don't think it affects your industry, it probably does affect your industry in some way. And it might affect them personally, the reporters, or it might affect their news cycle or what they're now reporting on. A lot of times, people who have a regular beat get pulled off because of trends or news cycles or political events, natural disasters, deaths, births, like all those.
Pandemic.
Pandemic, all of those things affect the news cycle, even if sometimes you don't think it does. It really does. And I think this just, it's, I feel like it's just something to be mindful of, you
Yeah.
know?
Again, have some sensitivity as well, because to your point, like it might not be something that they write about, but it might be affecting them on a personal level. You don't know. And
Yeah.
then you're kind of like aggressively cover me, cover me, cover me. Like one, I'm really not talking about that, or two, this isn't how I feel about it, or that's affecting me in this type of way. And so just kind of having that, just keeping all of those things in mind, a little, being a little sensitive, not like, not sugarcoating things, right? But definitely just like realizing we're all still people. There are things going on.
Human emotions are involved. I think the other thing is also to be sensitive. So, like, not to capitalize on stuff too much, too, because you do find brands coming up with, like, you know, I can't think of an example at this moment.
Oh,
And I,
I
okay.
can. Okay, so remember when the whole George Floyd thing was going on and we were
Yeah.
talking like racial equality for Blacks and that whole situation? So many big brands and companies, they devoted and they vowed to send millions and millions of dollars into, you know, either into these different organizations that were supporting that cause, the Black organizations, or a little DI, a DEI hiring within, like adding diversity within their companies. And
Right.
3 years later, I feel like something recently just came out about a report on all of those companies and what they actually did. And it's just like
They didn't do anything.
they didn't follow with any of their promises. And that often happens, and it's just the most frustrating thing. And it's just like,
Yeah.
that's so insensitive. You guys were only trying to get in, and it's
You
like,
were
okay,
just trying to get into the news cycle, basically.
exactly, for being supportive, allegedly supportive of these causes. But the thing about it is, not only do you need to be in a news cycle because you support the cause, but actually support it. So like, you'll get even more coverage when you actually
do something
that yeah do, because again, that's another thing that happens, not a lot of people do. So when they see like, oh my god, you're trustworthy, you're building, you know, trust with your audience by doing that, okay, there's more brand, you know, awareness for what you're doing. So it's like, it only works in your favor if you're going to try to do that, to follow through.
And we actually had that conversation in our social media panel with Carlin. She talked about how 2023 and maybe the last 4 or 5 years, authenticity was like a huge factor of everything. Everybody was talking about authenticity and that how important it has become to the customer that you're authentic in what you're saying and what you're doing. So don't just pitch for the sake of jumping on a news thing. Let's pitch because we're actually doing something impactful. And you know what? If you're not involved in that movement, just ignore it. Just go on to something you are involved in. Like just
right, exactly. Don't try to make fetch happen.
Don't make fetch happen. Yeah, do what you're good at. Don't force it. Let's talk a little bit about pitching response. I know when I talk to people who are DIYing or people who've pitched for the first time, or sometimes also people who got lucky for the first time and got a response, what should people expect? And we kind of talked about rejection a little bit. As far as pitching response, I would say 80% rejection. What do you think?
Yeah, 80% rejection, honestly. And I think that depending on what industry you're in, you really just need to like pivot your strategy, right? So if you're trying to get a profile in a publication, maybe right now they're not writing profiles. So maybe you might need to change your strategy and look into writing contributed content and pitching that. You might get a better response because they run more of those type of articles versus them actually writing it. So it's like really making sure that you're pitching what they need and you'll get a better response if it's something, you know, that they want at that time.
But I think that's the other thing to actually point out as far as pitching response is there is a number of reasons they're going to say rejection is is what happens. Okay. So just because I think that's the one thing about I feel like most PR people are ambitious and proactive and positive minded. They have like a positivity to them because they have to keep persevering over rejection, but rejection doesn't mean no. It just means not in this shape and format, not at this time, not this particular angle. So that's where the diligence of PR professionals comes into play. That's where our expertise comes into play. Okay, like to Jasmine's point, maybe they want it this way. Maybe they want an article instead, or maybe they want it in March instead of December, you know? So like, remember, you have to kind of, I mean, if you're not going to be a PR pro, I guess you don't have to remember it, but just to keep in mind, there's a lot of reasons there's a no. And even if you're working with an agency and your agency pro comes back and says, oh, well, they declined this article. Well, I'm going to tell you a very specific case, and I won't mention the client because this happens to all of our clients, actually, where we'll ask for an article. We get the article from the client or we'll draft the article. And by the time it's approved, it's been 2 months down the line. Well, the reporter wanted it 2 months ago, or at least 1 month ago. They wanted it 1 month ago, and we're delivering it late. Hello?
Yeah, a day late and a dollar short. Is that how that sounds?
Yeah, just because they said yes doesn't mean they said yes perpetually. It's like, yes, if you could get it to me within a month, and if you can't, then you're going to have to figure something else out. Sorry.
Right. A lot of opportunities are not evergreen. And that's the thing definitely to keep in mind. And when they are, honestly, I feel like sometimes you might get the article to them, but if it is an evergreen topic, the editor might hold on for months. That's happened before too, as well. Yeah. Send them something and 6 months later, like, well, we had a lot of news. Again, they are
cycle, you
know, pitching content. That's their cycle. This is what they're covering this month. This is what they're covering. And they'll hold on to that content. So even, you know, after you pitch them, they say they want it, kind of manage your expectations on that front too. And know they might not publish it today. They might not publish it at the end of the month. It might not be whenever, but they will eventually publish it, and keep that in mind too.
And that actually falls into this next one, how to follow up. I think that's another thing that PR people do really well. And I actually talked to someone this morning, is a client. We're working on some CES stuff. And he's like, well, actually, I don't ever follow up. How does that work? And I was like, oh, okay. So you just send your email out to the ether and you never follow up. That's why it doesn't work. So PR people, we are just like, I guess, not hound dogs. What is the term for someone who just doesn't stop?
Persistent.
persistent, but there's an animal. There's an animal that doesn't.
I don't even
know. It's like we're like a media piranha. It's like you just don't stop until you're finished, until you get there. I always say don't stop until you get the no, you know? Right. And that's what we do is we follow up. Hey, either did you get our pitch? And I know journalists hate this, but did you get our pitch? Can we do something together? Or, hey, we had this interview. Is it going to be published? Or when is it going to be published? I mean, there's a way to ask it. Obviously, you're going to ask it in a nice way. You're right. going to ask it in a way where you're offering support. Is there anything else I can provide to you to get this article published?
Right.
Do you know the timing of the article? You know, you got to kind of finesse your way into
my favorite
it.
Is, did you have a published date in mind? That's my go-to.
Did you have a published date in mind? You know, like it's, you got to use that charisma, right?
Exactly. Where you're not like, publish this now.
Yeah, right.
Now, but you're kind of just like, what were you thinking?
Yeah. So even though it seems kind of like innocent, that follow-up is required. Sometimes I've gotten people come back and say like, oh my gosh, thanks for reminding me. Have you gotten that before?
I mean, literally probably within the last month, somebody was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you did this. I flagged it. Thank you. And then they published it the next day. And I was like,
hello.
If I never followed up, can you imagine? And it was a big publication too. And the story was timely. It was in retail, like technology and cybersecurity. And it's Christmas time. People steal all the time. So it was like a perfectly timed article. Sent it to her last month. Didn't hear. But because I followed up with her and because the time was right and because she was looking for content, she published it immediately.
Yeah. So that is really important. Following up in a nice way, offering additional support, offering a reminder, like especially when they say, hey, it's going to publish on December 15th and then December 15th rolls around and it's not published, you're like, oh, hey, just checking in, you know, are you guys still planning on publishing today or did it get pushed out? Because that does happen. It gets delayed, pushed out,
all
whatever. The thing with earned media again is that you have to be flexible. You have to be flexible. You have to be compassionate and empathetic with the journalist because the journalist who writes it, it doesn't always have that control. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Sometimes the editor pushes it for another story. So just remember that when you're following up, that one, you should follow up, of course, but two, there's ways to kind of ask.
Yeah. And then also too, I guess a question I get asked often, and you kind of answered this, but like, what if you never get a no when you're following up? What at that point, when do you stop following?
When do you stop? Never. No.
Right. No. You know what I've done? I've pitched somebody like last year, maybe followed up 3 or 4 times. They didn't respond. I'll come back the next year and say, hey, hope you had a great year. I know we talked about this article, blah, blah, blah. Like I'll try to find my way. And I've gotten a response from that. Like, oh, hey, sorry. I was out on medical leave or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Never know what's going on with the person. And again, it's not that they don't want to work with you or they're not interested all the time. It's literally life, right? And so that happened to me. Like, oh, I was on medical leave. The article got pushed. I was out longer than I thought I was going to be. And I said, you know what? Absolutely. I completely understand. Like, I hope you're doing well. Like, actually show a little bit of caring when they do explain to you why they weren't able to, you know, publish your article or do the interview. And then,
oh, I just had a baby, you know, whatever. Like, you're right. Hello.
Any opportunity I can talk about my child, I will. So like if people have kids, I always like that is the number one, like it always works, you know? And so just kind of keeping those things in mind and maybe you have to circle around, especially if it's a bigger publication, right? Like if it's a trade publication, maybe not. Maybe that just means they don't like that angle, right?
But
if a bigger, you know, pub, fast company, whatever, then the year later follow-up is good because they'll see like, oh, they're persistent, but not overly annoying.
I mean, as an optimist, we're talking about ways around stuff. I mean, sometimes there is a no, guys. There is a no, and sometimes they don't want you. So that's also something to keep in mind. I'm taking the optimistic angle here, but There is a no sometimes.
To your point, like, I'm optimistic. Like, this story might not work, but I know you got something. It's something coming down the pipe. I know I'm going to get you eventually. That's how I think about it, you know? And it's working.
Yeah. No, that's true. I've done that too. I've done that before. I've done that even with an article that we, like, even when there's no article submitted, when you're just like, hey, I hope you had a good year, or haven't talked to someone in a long time, engage with them in a long time, and just kind of like, hey, what are you working on? Sometimes I do that just to kind of see, knowing that I might have something coming down the pipeline for them. So.
And you're getting right to that. So this would fit in for pitching best practices, just to your point. Like, when you do get a yes, you still need to talk to the editor after that. Don't just be that friend that comes around when you want something.
Yeah.
What I've been doing over the last few years is, like, around the holidays, or if I know somebody's birthday, I'll send them an e-card.
LinkedIn tells you their birthday. Okay. I get so many birthday notifications.
Yeah. That's another point too. Connect with them on LinkedIn, not just emailing them, cover my client, pick me. Like, actually, really, again, that's that media relations part, the relation to the media. That's what that means. Not just getting them to cover. So a lot of times that's what I make sure to do too. Like, hey, thank you so much. Also thanking them. I feel like a lot of times people forget to do that. Like, thank you for covering my client. We really loved your article. Like, give them a little props, big them up a little bit. You know, they did work. They for free, kind of technically. I mean, they
gave them.
But for you, you know, you got what you wanted. And so I think it's really important to let them know, like, you appreciate them. You'd love to work with them in the future. Like, those are the type of.
You're sharing their content.
Sharing their content. Know? Yeah, exactly. Like, all of those type of things, you know.
Really, I think something to remember when it comes to sharing, the media, the journalist, I'm sure you're going to answer this in the way I want you to. What are they looking for, Jasmine? What is the journalist looking for?
Or when what?
When they write an article, what are they looking for?
They want engagement. They want readers.
They want readers. So share their freaking content. Like, that's their job, is to write something people will read. I think something, their job isn't to report on the clients. Their job isn't to, unless they're an investigative reporter, uncover some kind of mystery. That's not their job. Right. Their job is, usually the editors that we work with are writing multiple articles at a time. And their job is to write something that people will read. Get as many eyeballs on that stuff as possible. So, like, please remember that. Remember that sharing is caring. Following the journalists on LinkedIn or X or wherever they want to be followed. Commenting on their article if there's an opportunity to comment. Like, and these are not things your PR person does. This is the thing that the brand has to do. Yeah. Because it's the brand that's getting the coverage. Yes, I can do that all day. And I do that. I comment on LinkedIn all the time for different journalists that I have relationships with. And I'm commenting. And sometimes it's like in relation to a client. And sometimes it's just, hey, I like this article, or thanks for writing about this. So just remember, your PR person is not the person. I think they should be the person to help you establish relationships, but you need to keep that relationship moving.
Yeah, you have to nurture the relationship and anything, really. I mean, if you want it to grow, right? Like, that's the whole process of life, like, nurture, grow. And so that's everyone, you know, on the team kind of has a job when it comes to that. And one thing I realized too, that works really well when you're doing social media is in residual content, right? So residual content would be, you wrote the article, you pitched it, it got placed in the publication. Now you can put it as your blog, you write a blog post about it, tag the publication because they did, you know, coverage on you. It's just so many different ways. Now you have more social media content, you know? So, like, it's always kind of like a yes, it works in your favor in all times to just share that content. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's just so important, making sure that you're taking the relationship one step further and doing your due diligence when it comes to engaging with the reporter. That said, I also want to say that a good PR firm will give you that relationship. Okay. A PR firm, yes, they own some relationships. That's great for introductions, but a good PR firm will hand over the relationship to the client. If I secured an interview with the Wall Street Journal, I'm not going to be the gatekeeper between you and the Wall Street Journal. My job is to make sure you execute a good interview. Yes, I want you to get the coverage. I want you to maintain, create a good, solid foundation of the relationship and interact with them appropriately. But after that, it's your job to sustain that relationship because they talk to you as the CEO or the thought leader or the expert or whatever. And I think that's some agencies gatekeep and some don't. And I think it's just a tactic to kind of like, you know, keep a little leverage. But I think the best thing is to really make sure that you're establishing your own relationships. There's still room for PR people. That's what we do. We're quality control. So that's kind of our role. I think that's what people should remember is that when it comes to media relations, we're quality control. We'll tell you how to do it, and or they should tell you how. The other best practice in media relations is really imperative for clients or people who are doing PR or working with a PR agency to remember that you are the expert. The PR person is a storyteller. They can help you uncover some angles, tell it in a really interesting perspective or unique way. But at the end of the day, the client is the expert and there has to be a sense of collaboration. I can make up only so much stuff and I can make up a lot. I'm really good at making stuff up.
I mean, honestly, my imagination ever since I was a child. So listen, this is the perfect career for me.
Yeah. So we can do that. But the point is to tell your story properly. We've got to have your expert input and your opinion and your viewpoints. And I think as you dive into PR in any way that you do it, whether it's with an agency, whether it's by yourself, remember that you are an expert. You're educating people at the end of the day. And that's the way you want to position either the relationship with the PR person or the relationship with the reporter too.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. All of those things are critical. I mean, that's if you want to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. If you want to, if not, don't worry about anything we just said.
Because that's another thing too. I feel like a lot of times I meet people, they just want to do PR because it's the thing to do. Like they know like, oh, I heard I got to do PR. And it's just like, what is the goal? Right. These things that we've discussed should be a part of the goal, a part of the objectives when it comes to dealing with the media for sure.
Yeah. Jasmine, thank you so much. This hour went by very quickly. but I think this is a great primer on media relations, and there's always more to be learned. So if you guys ever have any questions, feel free to email us, Ronjini@thesilvertelegram. Jasmine is Jasmine@thesilvertelegram. We can answer more questions. I'm sure we'll do another webinar or podcast in the future. So Jasmine, thanks for your time today.